In this month's episode of the History Explorer podcast, Shannon Parrish, associate curator in the photographic collection here at the National Museum of American History, examines three photographic portraits, all unique in their own way. Shannon's discussion shows how portraiture and the creation of an image between the sitter and photographer can be used to express many ideas, beyond that of simply a picture of an individual. Shannon also gives insight as to how curators look at and use portraiture in a museum setting.
I'm Shannon Parrish, curator of photography in the Photographic History Collection at the National Museum of American History. We have three photographs in front of us that address the idea of portraiture and identity. There is always a conflict whenever a photograph is made, and that conflict is between the sitter and the photographer. Sometimes the sitter is more compliant than the photographer, and sometimes the photographer is more compliant than the sitter. When we come to have our photographs made, we all project a particular image of how we want to be seen. Famous individuals are very adept at projecting a public persona. How do they want the media to interpret their photographs? What do they want to be said about them? But the same is true for average individuals. How we smile, how we don't smile, what we wear, whether we do our hair, whether we don't do our hair, all of those things say something about us, and we make choices. Photographers also have particular goals when they photograph individuals. We have three photographs in front of us today that are examples of this conflict between the sitter and the photographer. And it's not necessarily a negative conflict. It creates a dynamic situation, but it's something to think about when you see portraits, to not give in quickly to what you see in front of you. In the photograph, Mary Lone Bear by Gertrude Kasebier, it's a poignant photograph. We have our six-year-old Mary Lone Bear, who is a Sioux Native American, and she, if you look at her, she's not really there by choice. Is she smiling like you think most six-year-olds are going to smile in front of a camera? No. Is she looking directly at the camera? Yes. However, her shoulder is slightly turned. So she's protecting herself a little bit. She's not opening herself up to the camera and to the photographer. In fact, she looks quite defiant. It took Gertrude Kasebier 3 years to get Mary Lone Bear into her studio in New York City. Gertrude Kasebier was a well-known portrait photographer in New York at the turn of the century. She had grown up in Colorado and played with Native Americans as a child, and she had very fond feelings about them. So as an adult woman, when Buffalo Bill's Wild West show came to town and the Native Americans were performing, it wasn't the Native Americans that she remembered, and it wasn't the kind of feeling that she remembered. They were not projecting the kind of ideas that she thought that the Native American held. She wanted to portray them as unique individuals with personality and with assertion and character. So what she did was she wrote to Buffalo Bill and invited the Native Americans to come to her studio. A group of them came. And when they came, she asked them to take off their performance regalia. Well, who they were was tied into all of that performance regalia. Taking off headdresses meant removing symbols of war heroism. Taking off all of the blankets and the jewelry and all of the other symbols that made them who they were made them uncomfortable. However, they sat with her. They sat for her. She made striking portraits of them that were atypical. They're not the typical pictures of Native Americans from that time period. They are very much about individuals and not about the Native American as a savage. It took about 3 years for Mary Lone Bear to build a relationship and confidence in the Native Americans who were part of Buffalo Bill's Wild West show in order to invite Mary Lone Bear to come to the studio. There was a feeling among and a sentiment among some of the Native Americans at the camp, at the encampments behind the performance venues, that having your photograph made would steal your soul. So after Mary Lone Bear came and sat for Gertrude K. Zabir, she died about 6 weeks later. After Mary Lone Bear died, every time Gertrude K. Zabir went to photograph the Native Americans at the Buffalo Flow Bill Wild West show, the women would grab their children and run away. She wrote a scathing letter to one of her friends who was a Native American and said that they should know better, that it wasn't the camera that took their soul. In this photograph of Brittany by Lauren Greenfield, we're seeing Brittany standing with her arms crossed, gazing down at us, and she is standing next to two outlines. One outline she has drawn of what she thinks she looks at, what she thinks she physically looks like. The other is the reality of what she looks like. Brittany is at a center for women who have eating disorders. Brittany is anorexic, and Brittany's trying to deal with what makes her anorexic. That particular disease is manifested in part by what happens in one's mind and how one perceives oneself. This is a very clear photograph about how we see ourselves and what the reality is, and that sometimes those two things don't match. Greenfield has done a number of photographs that explore issues around women and women's eating disorders and the pressures that women experience with materialism in an American culture today. It's very difficult to ask somebody who's struggling with their own identity and who's struggling to see themselves with a reality to present themselves and to be open to Greenfield. Greenfield's goal is to tell Brittany's story so that other young women can explore this issue, that if they're struggling with anorexia, if they're struggling with how they perceive themselves, if they're struggling with a mismatched idea about what they really look like and what they think they look like or what they think they want to look like, she's using Brittany to represent a lot of other women and let them know that they're not alone in that struggle. In this portrait by photographer Robert Weingarten of Colin Powell, it does not look like a typical portrait. In fact, it asks the question, what is a portrait? And what's the difference between a portrait and a visual biography? So often the photographer and the sitter bring multiple elements to a photograph to express who the sitter is and what the sitter thinks about himself or herself. Robert Weingarten had this idea that a single portrait is insufficient to describe an individual, and that actually what makes us who we are is a lifetime of experiences. Our hair color may change, our hairstyle may change, our height, weight may change over time. But who we are is defined by all of our experiences. So Robert Weingarten went to a number of American icons and asked them what makes them who they are. They made the lists, and knowing that they weren't going to have to be in the photograph, many of them were willing to put not only the things that made them famous, but also things that were very personal to them. So in this photograph by Colin Powell, which is a very large photograph at 60 by 90 inches, we have multiple images and multiple layers, and that's how we are. We have multiple layers and different things that influence who we are. You'll notice that there's a layer over the entire photograph. One might either see that as a background, or one might see that as a foreground through which you need to look through. And that can be your interpret. Either way is fine, and that is how you see it is how you see it. In Colin Powell's photograph, this layer that you see over the entire photograph, or under the entire photograph, are the names on the Vietnam Wall. This is something that shapes all of his experiences, thinking about the Vietnam War and what happened there and all the men and women who died. In the center of the photograph is his office at the State Department, which shapes the walls of the State Department are the apartments that he grew up in New York City. You also notice that there are maps of the war in Iran. There's a purple heart that sits high on the surface. In the lower left-hand corner, you'll notice that there's a little red wagon, and that symbolizes his foundation. So when you look at this photograph multiple times, you'll have different experiences each time you see it. In the same way that when you look at a friend, some days they look different. Some days they're more emotional. Some days they are more intellectual and their student self comes forward. And other days their silly self comes forward or their performance self comes forward. And when you look at these photographs over time by Robert Weingarten, different elements emerge. On the right-hand side, you'll notice that there's a very large statue. You might recognize it as the statue at the Thomas Jefferson Memorial. So Colin Powell is shaped by his upbringing, by his war experiences, by how he wants to contribute to the future and to change the world, but he's also affected by and shaped by what happened in the past. And historical figures like Thomas Jefferson and the words that he laid down and the kind of life that he lived shapes how Powell wants to change the world as well.
With portraiture and identity, it seems like in some of these, the photographer has a goal of what they want, and obviously the sitter has a goal about how they want to be portrayed. So how is identity really created in this photograph, and whose identity is coming out of it?
Mm-hmm. That's a great question, Matt. It's a sliding scale. Sometimes the photographer's intentions outweigh what the sitter's intentions are. Sometimes the sitter's intentions and goals will push back and outshine anything that the photographer can control. In these particular three photographs, all three of these photographers are well-known and established photographers. So the individuals who are willing to work with the photographer, and that includes even six-year-old Mary Lone Bear, they know something about what they're getting into. So they're willing to put themselves in a position of vulnerability, so to speak, and subject themselves to whatever the photographer is going to want to do, so that they know that they're going to be part of a larger project, but they have some idea of what the goals are. Clearly, their participation is a willingness to work with that photographer and be open to what might happen. With Brittany, in some ways, it's kind of part of her therapy to be willing to share her story. With Mary Lone Bear, she's kind of pressured by Kay Zabier and the other Native Americans who are Kay Zabier's friend. I can't speak directly to why Colin Powell would be willing to participate, except that American icons and famous people are always asked to sit for individuals. I suspect, though, that this is a different kind of portrait. He's never worked with a portrait photographer in which he didn't actually have to sit for the photographer. And this question about what makes you who you are, to be answered visually, is something that he probably hasn't done before and was a new experience for him.
Thanks to Shannon Parrish for taking the time to discuss her work and these three portraits with us. For the History Explorer podcast, this is Matt Ringelstetter. Join us again next month as we take another look behind the scenes here at the National Museum of American History. Podcast made possible by a grant from the Verizon Foundation.